8 o'clock live talk. I hope everyone is ready for a great new year and you've had a good time over Christmas. Hopefully it's going to be a good new year for everybody and your horses. We've got quite a few questions here that I'm going to go through. I'm going to try and get through quite a few of them. So there will be questions that people obviously post online, and that's fine. The only catch is the questions sort of roll on as I talk. So sometimes when I'm answering a question, I may miss a question along the way that comes up. But what I'll do is Jenny's going to sort of write down the questions and bring them in. So if we've got time, we'll answer them. But any questions, they don't get missed. I do look at them, so we can always add them into another live talk, because these live talks are really just so people can, I obviously sometimes have subjects, but what I like to do is just find out what people are interested in and what the troubles they're having and what they want to learn and just go through questions like that. Yeah, we've got a few people coming on now, which is great. So what I'll do, there's a few questions here. They're all on different topics. The one I'm going to start with at the moment is from Viv. Now, Viv, something that I talk about a lot is, shut down horses, and you've probably heard me on my live talks and through videos. That one of the biggest things that I see, and I never expected to see until I started training people and their horses, was shut down horses. And this is a particular question about a shut down horse and more of an extreme shut down horse. And this one, I've come across a few of these at clinics and lessons, and there are ways to tap into them, but I'll just read the question out. I've just bought a new horse and she's so shut down and frozen. The minute you put a halter on, the eyes gaze over, the ears freeze. I've tried to get a focus, but no matter if I move or bang or jump, nothing changes. How do I proceed? So because a horse like that's been shut down, everything you do will be shutting it. It'd be just, here's a person doing something, zone out. And those horses tend to require, if you weren't worried about the shutdownness in them, they tend to require a lot of effort and energy to make things happen. Otherwise, they just tap out and they're not interested. They don't try. They've lost search. They've lost the ability to search. They've lost the will to search. There's a few ways to go about it. There's a way that I use. I sort of like to talk about horses that I've worked that sort of are similar. There's a little horse that I worked in Germany for a couple of lessons, and it was really shut down, and like within seconds of you stopping. So say for instance, you could scare that horse, and when it got moving, it'd flee and run and get frightened. So if someone tried to say send it off somewhere in a round yard without a halter or anything on it, and they put a bit of drive into it, they could scare it and it'd run around like this, but then as soon as everything would stop, it'd just go into this place that you couldn't sort of really get it to communicate to with you in. Now, that horse was interesting. We tried two different things. Now, there's a long, which is this way you're going to do, you can do, because whatever the horse is with you in your paddock long term, this is one long term way, not this is just one small part of the equation, is getting a horse to like you again. So that may require you just acknowledging your horse, watching it closely when you walk up to it, very closely. I mean, from a distance, when you walk in the paddock with it or anything like that, what you've got to look out for is when you're walking in for that horse, you've got to go, hang on a minute. The horse looks like it's a normal horse. It saw me and it looked away and went, I'm going to plan an escape route or something like that. You'll probably see when the horse is quite a distance away and in a big open area, it's going to show you exactly what it feels about you before it actually gets close to you and shuts down, or you put a holder on. And then that's the time that you start to communicate with it. And you know, every time you see that tension or that sort of look away and that idea that that horse is going to sort of go, hang on a minute, she's coming, that's where you'd probably stop, acknowledge that and step back and just wait a little bit and see if the horse's thoughts cast back to you. And it might just let down and let a bit of, you'll see that release of tension, and it'll might let down a little bit, might lick and chew, might do things like that. So watching for those small signs when you're at a distance are going to be, when that horse started communicating with you, they always start communicating with you somewhere. And a lot of times the horses that are shut down, people miss the horse communicating with them way before they should have. It might be just when you open the gate into the paddock, even if the horse might be 200 metres away, you might need a pair of binoculars to see it, but it might start its process of, oh, crikey, here they come, and that's when it all starts to sort of happen, and that's where you start to talk to it again and use your, you know, pressure and release. And then obviously you're not putting pressure on the horse because you alone is walking towards that horse, or putting yourself in with that horse's pressure. So that's where I'd sort of start looking into it. And as I say, as soon as you see the tension rise in the horse thinking about doing something, searching, as soon as you see it searching, it could be negative searching for way out. It could be searching towards you. Doesn't matter. Either way, you're going to step back and draw to give that horse space, to give it time to go, oh, that got them set back. I relaxed a little bit. Oh, but either way, where they're searching, the colour of my screen's changing. I don't know what's happening, but might be the sun coming out in the background, but it's just gone all orange. So that's going to happen, and then you sort of reward the horse searching, step back, let it have some release of tension, and you go about that. And that's what you know for a long time people have talked about approach and retreat. To me, that's approach and retreat. That's basically all it means to me. It's been around forever, and the people who have sort of taken it on board in a really productive way, the ones that have really acknowledged the rise and fall of the tension in the horse, you know, when it first starts, not when it looks big and the horse is run away. And that's where you start the communication. And the other thing you want to be doing is, there's a friend of ours, and unfortunately she's not around with us anymore, but she was really working on encouraging happy, connected horses through mutual grooming. And, you know, a lot of her training was about mutual grooming and getting horses to feel good about being around people. Now mutual grooming and things like that is something that, you know, you do that you don't expect something. So a lot of times when we work horses, we want something, so the horse has to give something, and then we reward it. And a lot of times if we don't sort of, and I got in the habit of years of training clients' horses and stuff, of not spending enough time doing what the horse liked, the horse always was sort of doing something for me to warrant that reward or release or something like that. And you know, the reality is horses will scratch each other. You know, obviously they give each other a scratch, but we can go and make them feel good with things like that. So shut down horse, if you were just standing around and you worked on that walking in and just getting relaxed with it, or getting it to more relax, and don't expect anything of it when you walk up to it, and don't put a holder on it, walk away, leave it, and just show it that you're okay coming up to it and things like that, it's gonna start to relax it a little bit and say, oh, I might accept them a little bit more. And then things like getting in and just scratching it somewhere, and it might seem shut down when you're scratching it, but if you find a spot, you've got to stay there for a while and just watch your horse really closely, and you'll see things start to happen, and you'll see it start to move its head a little bit, or it might start to, you know, they start to do little things with their lips, and you might see their eyes start to change a little bit and things like that. And the horse in Germany, we used a little bit of that to get it to sort of unlock its thoughts a little bit and search again and look towards us. So we were trying to get it to flex a little bit in the halter and actually think with the rein or the lead rope instead of just go on shut down and bending. So what we did is we we scratched it until it sort of went, oh, and looked around a little bit, and then we used that and put that equation with pressure of the lead rope. So eventually the horse would actually start to think with the feel of the rein just a little bit and connect with us. But yeah, finding a spot and staying there for a while and doing something that the horse likes, that's one way, and that's the long-term, all the time approach that you'll be doing forever to get that horse to like being around you. The other thing is when you work them. Now, there's a way I sort of use, and it's very effective, but it is tapping into stress. But the thing is, the way I see it is, I see a lot of horses have been stressed all their life and shut down. They've just got all this stress internalized and they're unhappy. And the shutdown horses, there is something that will get them out of their shell. A big enough fright, a big enough something, they will come out, and some of them come out, and that's when they can be dangerous, especially when you're riding them or something like that. So what you want to look out, the one thing I do is you might think popping a flag may not bother your horse or something, but what I'll do is I might just, when I'm working it. Now, the reason I do this, I wouldn't expect everyone to do it, but I do it, and I like to show people, and I wouldn't even show it so much as a regular, this is how you do it video on the subscription, because I like to be there and explaining it to people and say, this is what I'm doing. Are you seeing this? Are you seeing that horse come out and search again? And this is how I'm going to help it. Now, if someone just did it slightly wrong, then they're going to maybe shut it down a little bit more because they're not reading their horse correctly. So something I like to do is just take the horse out of that moment of shutdown. It requires something that worries the horse, okay? So, and it's only very quickly it happens, quickly enough to get it out and go, oh, what's happening, okay? So it's almost like if a branch broke beside that shutdown horse and it suddenly went, gee, what have I got to do? I've got to escape. Okay, so what that does is it gets the horse to jump out of a hole quickly. And then when it's out of the hole, it's looking around going, oh, crikey, I'm out of my state of being shut down. Now, that's the moment that you got to somehow get that horse to search to you. So I use it because I show the horses that through guidance and feel and pressure and things that I use, I can help you learn to work again and feel good about me helping you. But they got to come out and go, I need to do something. And then when they're doing that, you go, follow me here. And I just walk backwards, like I'll get this little fella here. And that's me and the horse, and they'll just go, just walk and follow me, walk and follow me, walk and follow me, maybe walk in here, and I'll just get that horse to wiggly worm and just hover, and just hover with me, and I'll just draw them in and get them to draw and hover, and they'll be going like this, because they'll be like going, oh, I was just in a state of shock there, something shocked me and got me out of my shutdownness, and then I'll just teach them to hover and focus and hover. And then just let them rest, and more often than not, you'll see them start to come and sniff out to you, and then they'll let down because of you, opposed to just letting down because of the release of pressure. I can do it. I'm not saying everyone can do it, because it's difficult, and you've got to read it right, and you've got to sort of know, be watching every moment. And you can see when that horse drops back in the hole, you can see when it comes out. And it's a very effective method I've found for getting the really extreme shutdown horses out. But you're not teaching them to move their feet by going away and chasing them around and all that. You're just teaching them to follow and just hone in. And then they just go, ah, oh, and they'll suddenly connect with you and release. And once they've done that, then you can teach them other ways to guide that are a bit different than what they've been taught. And the other important thing before I move on is, whatever's shut down that horse is a repetition in its mind. So say that horse has done 1,000 circles on a lunge or 1,000 hindquarter yields. If you do those things, that it's going to shut down. So a lot of horses that have done a heap of horsemanship and they've done it and started to shut down because they've been pushed away too much and people haven't allowed the horses to search and make their own decisions, those horses have become shut down. if you go and do the same patterns that somebody else did that shut them down, those patterns just put the horse back into the hole. So somehow you got to do things that are a little bit, like, or a fair bit different, that they go, oh, this is quite different. And then you can bring them back into finding circles again, but it's sort of like you've got to wean them back into it in a different way. So, yeah, very technical, but I like that. There's another question up here by Rhonda about cadence and stuff like that, and that's something, if we get to it, we'll talk about. But it's given me thought to do a whole news, like a talk just on cadence. And I don't teach exact footfall and what foot's picking up in my horsemanship to people a lot until they've know where the thoughts are and they've got the thoughts on track, because a lot of times you can be worrying about every foot and the horse fixes all that itself. So it's not something I'll get too deep in at the moment, but there's a few questions in there which I'll sort of address about it, which is the stopping seat, because there's a couple of questions in here which I'll get to. One's the backup and the stop. So Rhonda's question was about the hind quarter and fore quarter control. Yes, the cadence, and she was more concerned about the cadence of the trot. So you just got to remember, when you're riding a trot, you're riding a backup. It's the same cadence, it's the same two beat rhythm. You know, if the left hind's picking up, then a front, then the right front four will be picking up at the same time. And once the horse has got good cadence, then basically it's going to be a trot. They never tend to get out of rhythm. They're always got, it seems to always have a nice two beat rhythm. But horses in a backup, some will have a three beat walk, some will have a four beat walk, some will have the proper nice two beat walk. So in the backup. So, but how do you use your seat to stop? Okay, so my seat when I stop is, I tend to use the same seat as I do in the backup, and then we'll be going to another question which is further along about, you know, getting a nice soft backup under the saddle. But I'll just find that question for you. Yeah, it's from Darlene. How to get a nice soft backup from some saddle. So it's a question I'm going to go to. So yeah, that what I do in my seat when I back up is I imagine that I'm becoming lighter on the horse. Okay, so sometimes when we put our feet forward to back up, we put our feet forward and we sit on our hip pockets. But when, you know, some people say sit on your hip pockets when you back up. The only catch is that some people put their feet forward, and as they sit on their hip pockets, they actually weight down over that lumbar region of their horse, and that's the area that's got to pick up. The horse got to pick up in the back and lift up. So what I try and do is I try and stay straight in my seat, and I imagine that I'm sucking my stomach up through the back of my shoulders. And what I do is, I don't know if you can see me, I'll stand up a bit higher here. So see that there, okay, my angle there with my hands. A lot of people sort of, you know, they sometimes back up and they'll put their reins low and try and get their horses to back up. The problem with that is that as soon as you put your hands low, what happens to your shoulders as they do that? And that tends to sort of make you crumple your core over, and you know you're not really in a good position to back up. So what I do is I lift my shoulders like that, and I always have my hands like reasonably high in the back up, because actually, you know, evidently I want my horses to lift their shoulders up. And so I lift my core and lighten, and you sort of do roll your pelvis and tilt it a little bit like you would be sitting on your hip pockets, but you're doing it in a way that's lightening your seat, not sitting on your hip pockets and clonking and doing that. So you sort of lighten and draw, and that will be the seat that I would use. And that will be the seat that I'd use for the stop, because the stop is just saying to the horse, you may have to back up. So I don't go plonk to stop and then lift to back up. You know, some people go woo, and they sort of drop into their horses to stop them, but I just sort of go, I'm hovering backwards when I stop. So it'll feel to the horse like my core. Now this little fella's going to be, just pretend he's riding. So say, for instance, this is a person riding. They go, when they want to go forward, their core goes like that and their horse goes like that, and it follows them. And then your core goes up and backwards and the horse sucks back with that. But not lifting and standing. What I mean is just lightening and bringing your core back. So if there's two magnets together, this magnet, this is your magnet, this is So you go like this, and the horse goes with that, and you go like that, and the horse goes with that, and like that, like that, like that, like that. And so the horse tries to stay underneath your magnet. So yeah, your core magnet's back and up a little bit to bring your horse back. I'll go to the question at the same time while we're on the subject of that. How do I get a soft back up from the saddle? He's responsive and soft on the ground, but ignores the backup request under saddle. And if I take a firmer contact, he just fixes his neck and braces against my hand. Now, I'm not saying this method, shouldn't talk about method. I don't like saying method. It makes it sound a little bit, but it's hard not to say it sometimes. But so I just talked about the seat in the backup. Now I'm going to talk about, I'll bring in a new horse. There we go. I'm with a pink. So if your horse knows how to take up contact, then on the ground, if your horse knows about contact, as in you take up that contact and it just lightens and backs up, just that simple. Just if your horse understands that simple equation on the ground, okay. Does it understand that equation in the bridle on the ground? Because are you asking in the bit the same thing or in the halter? So asking in the halter for a horse to back up on the ground, you might get a nice backup, but in the bit, you may not get a nice backup. So you've got to do that on the ground in the bit. Okay, so get them the same as you do with the halter to get your nice backup, get them to sort of soften, loosen, and back up. Okay, sometimes they back up first, sometimes they soften and loosen first. Each try in the right direction is a reward where you just lighten your hands and say, yeah, that's it. So if they back their feet first without loosening in the jaw, don't worry about it. Just reward the backwards of the feet, and then they'll find, eventually two and two to come together. It's a bit of an art, I must admit, in some horses to get the soft bend that bends through the whole body and loosens up, because it's do I push a bit further? Do I lighten up here? So what you want to do is, a lot of horses that brace is what's happening is you're taking the reins, you may be taking the reins and just saying back, trying to push it back like that. Now, what I would do with your horse is I would imagine that I get my reins. It's a good old iPhone. If you can get iPhone charges. Now, this is a set of reins. Okay, now you've seen me do this a few times on these talks where I talk about feel. Now, instead of pulling your horse to go backwards like that and go pull it like that, maybe just, so that's a loose rein. You pick up a bit of feel. Now, you pick up that little bit of feel, and that's just enough for your horse to go, oh, if I was to walk forward, I'd only be able to walk an inch or half an inch, and there'd be, I'd walk into the fence, okay? So what I would maybe practice with your horse while it's really braced is I'd pick up a bit of feel to show the horse that if it walked forward and you were to just say, I'm not going to let my hands go with you, the horse would walk into pressure in, an inch maybe or less, a little bit less. So then when I've picked up that bit of feel and the weight of the reins just gently near the horse, I would actually use my legs and say, well, do something, move your feet. And the horse will go, oh, okay. And it'll go and it'll walk into the reins, because you're not going to say keep going and let them out, because you've set the boundary in front of your horse, okay? So it's going to look a bit like this. Here's the boundary, and the horse is going to go, oh, that didn't work, okay? And then it might brace in the neck for a second and go, oh. But I would repeat that quite a few times. And what you might find is you might pick up a bit of feel and then go like this, and a bit of energy. But as soon as that horse moves its feet, not keep kicking it, but as soon as it moves its feet, stop kicking, because it'll move and find pressure. You might find it'll go, actually, instead of walking forward and finding the pressure, I might step back a step. And it may not be round and backing up, but it'll start searching in reverse, because it walked into a boundary. And then it walked into a boundary again, and then it walked into a boundary again, and then it walked into a boundary again. And it goes, well, maybe I'll search in a new direction. I might step back. So it'll choose to step back. So that's one way to get your horse to start thinking backwards. But you've got to be very careful. If you keep kicking and hauling, then you're going to bind them up and teach it to flip over backwards. That's what I don't want to encourage you to teach your horse. I just want you to just imagine that it can step up into the fence and you just block it. Now, don't block it too hard and try and haul it back. Just, you might repeat it 10 times, 15 times, and just see what happens with your horse. If he starts to go, oh, I might just shuffle back, then you go, that's the answer. So what you'll soon do is pick up feel, and soon your horse will go, feel, loosen, shuffle back. And then when it starts to search backwards, then what you may do is you may just go, I don't ask for backups, I ask for transitions. So, and I very encourage people a long time to ask for transitions. Just go, back up, thank you, back up, thank you, back up, thank you. And then for a while, just till that horse just goes, that's all I have to do. God, that's great, that's easy. And then when you put up your back up, thank yous close together, soon your horse will go, would you just like me to keep backing to save the stops? And then soon your horse will choose when it's ready to back up. And if you do it like that, you'll end up with a horse that does nice straight backups when it's learning, instead of, you know, bending this way and that way, because you've been trying to pull it backwards and back it up, and it's been trying to search for the way out of it. It'll be starting to search for the backup, but not in a worrying way, because you haven't scared it with the pressure. You've just said, well, door's closed in front. And some people might say, well, that's going to ruin forward impulsion, isn't it? And I say, well, no. It as long as the legs are creating impulsion, soon enough through the boundaries and stuff and the feel of the reins, the horse will know when the boundary's not in front of it. And then later on, then you bring forward contact into your horse's foot. Not till they understand to loosen and back up. But I hope that helps your horse. That's one way I sort of look into sort of trying to fix it. And, you know, down the track, if you sort of do fix it, let me know if it works. There's a couple of videos online of I put them on either last month of a horse where I was doing a similar lesson where I pick up a bit of feel, ask for a bit of energy, and just as soon as the horse leant on the reins, you just close the reins. But the horse has got to lean first. Don't just pull up on them. So I hope that helps with the backup. And with the seat and the backup put together, you might start finding that horse searching in reverse. So the next question I got here. Now there's one that I'll just say for Desiree. I won't answer too much of this here, because if you're on the subscription, just go through our foal handling videos and you'll see exactly about foal handling and how to sort of do it. Now you can sort of start foal handling at any age, but what I encourage is getting the mum in first with the foal and just, you know, being around the foal while you're leading the mum around. But I've got videos online of me doing it, so it's very easy just to go straight on and watch that. And if there's anything else, because but I'll talk a little bit about it, because I guess everything has got a little bit of a video, but there's more direct videos on the foal handling. But yeah, I just get the mare in and lead the mare around and stand with the mare, rub the mare, and the foal will get a bit interested. Every time you see it get a bit interested, you might just step away from it and just let its curiosity bring it over to you. And then I might get a long stick or something like that and just sort of, you know, while it's around the mare, I just rub the mare with a long stick, rub the foal a little bit at the same time. It might jump a bit and just do that sort of thing. And then eventually, once the horse can be rubbed over with a long stick, you can drape a long rope over it and things like that, and the little foals will start to get used to all that, and then you can start to sort of, you know, put a rope on them and get them to sort of leave. But you're going to get their curiosity towards you first. So yeah, and then once the foal is well handled and not frightened of you when it's around its mum, then you start to handle it a little bit when it's in the yard on its own. But by that time, I would have had the foal leading a bit and things like that, whether it's leading off a rope around its neck or a halter. But and when you do start to sort of get it so you can put a rope around it and things like that, just put a little loop around its neck, and you can use the mum. When you pick up a bit of feel, the foal will search the wrong way, search the right way, search the wrong way. And then if it goes the wrong way, it'll feel a little bit of pressure build, and if it goes the right way and thinks towards you, then the pressure will release a little bit. So soon when you pick up a bit of feel on the rope, the horse will search to you, and And then soon what you can do is you can actually use the mum and lead the mum a little bit, and then the foal will start to move its feet towards the direction that it's looking through to lead, because the mum's going that way too. You can help them to sort of lead through helping, you know, by moving their mum a little bit. But when you get to a point that you guarantee that every time you pick up a bit of field, they're going to look and move, then it's you know, and the horse is real comfortable with you, then you'd be starting to think about maybe having the mum, you know, maybe just tied up over there while you work the foal over here, and get it so it's sort of moving away from its mum and things like that. The other thing I like to do with the foals is if they're trying to hide behind their mum too much and duck away and hide, then all I do is just keep moving mum around behind me, and then eventually the foal will be over there looking at you, and then you just rest and just say, here, and the foal might start getting curious in you, and every time it ducks around with mum, you make it feel like mum's saying, don't drink, don't hide, while you just keep her moving, and just keep her moving around behind you, move around behind you, and then the foal will go, oh, mum's not interested in me, and it might stop, and then you tuck mum behind you, and then the focus on you, instead of just hide from you, and then might start to pay a bit more attention of you and things like that. So, but I do encourage going on the foal handling videos, because you'll see it, you know, me go through the sort of the whole process of it. Some of the other questions I answer are online also, but the, you know, there's bits and pieces where I'm working with people on little subjects, but more and more on the subscription, I am adding more things with a bit more detail, because I understand people are wanting a bit more detail and you know, a bit of a sort of a, you know, instead of just me teaching at a clinic and something like that, and we're going to add more and more of that. Little question about weaning in there too, which I've talked about a little bit on the subscription, but not really done a whole thing on it, but with the weaning of young horses, when I watch my horses and when they're ready to wean, they're interested in going out in the paddock, they're wandering around, they're going with other horses, they're not so interested in mum when she wanders off, and the mum's not so interested in them, and it's usually somewhere between that 6 months and a year they start to develop their own little selves, and that's when I start to think, well, maybe that's a good time to wean. Obviously sometimes you have to wean them early for certain reasons, but what I would do is make sure you've got if you've got another few horses around, have them in a group with those horses, and they get used to those other horses and they become their friends. And so what we do is we just have like a fence, and there's sort of paddock yards on this side and the paddock yards on this side, and you know we'll just gently separate them off, and the foal can sort of, if the mare's interested in the foal, she'll come back and hang on the fence, the foal's on the fence, but the foal's got the whole herd of horses in here, and then the mare can come back and go, the foal can too, and eventually, you know, but generally the foal just finds the company of the herd, as long as the fence is good in the middle and they can see, still get to each other a little bit, they'll soon start to wander away from each other, and that tends to work quite well. But it works much better when the foal becomes independent, much harder when they're not independent. So when they're too early, it's harder on the foal, harder on the mare. And some mares, when I do that system, it's like when we did with ours, one mare just went, thanks, bye. And she came back once and that was it. She was like, I'm gone. I was waiting for this, and we were in a drought at the time. So whereas another mare kept coming back because she was a real, you know, it's a clinging mare to a foal. Sorry, getting a bit lost here now. I've been thinking about, this is from Rhonda, I've been thinking about confidence and compliance. Happy to hear more about that, losing forward and how to get it back. Confidence and compliance. Confidence, you see confidence in horses through them searching. Now, there's a good article that I can't remember exactly who at the moment, but it was put on about, it was an article about shutting down, horses that shut down. It was a great article. The problem with a searching, confident horse is you have got a horse with an opinion, and sometimes you have to deal with that opinion all the time. The good thing about compliance is the horse doesn't have an opinion, and it just sort of half shuts down and operates, or, you know, operates in this sort of state of learned helplessness. Some people like that because it can be a bit easier, because sometimes having conversations with your horse all the time and have them having an opinion, sometimes you don't want to hear what they want to say. Sometimes, you know, you've got to deal with those things. But confidence and compliance, confidence is a horse actively searching and making decisions. Now, some horses that aren't confident will still make funny decisions. They'll run back to their mates and things like that. So they're not confident, because they're not confident with being with you. So they're gonna, their decisions are always gonna lead them back to where they're confident. And generally they're the horses that seek home. You know, they're always magnet somewhere. They're so they're not confident with you. And then there's the other horses that are just sort of confident in things, and they're just searching around here, there. They're, when you're going that way, they're thinking that way, you know, and you feel them. You know that they're sort of working and operating. When you pick up a rein and you lighten it, you know that they're hooked onto that rein and they're searching, and you sort of know it. I try to explain, it's going to be, you can see their ears working. They're constantly sort of, you know, tuning in. You pick up that rein, they'll tune that ear. They'll go that way, or they'll pick up that rein and they'll fight and go that way. That's still a confident horse. It's just choosing to do what it thinks. Well, I mean, sorry, it's making its own decision. It may not be confident because it's wanting to go the other way, but and that because it could be the lack of confidence. Compliance is where the horse goes that way, and some of them get so good at it that you almost feel that they're sort of going in the right direction. But if you just loosen everything up, you'll feel that they're not really there. They'll just go, you know, you say, you just stop riding like they used to, and you just loosen up on those reins, loosen up on your seat, center your hands, and you'll feel them go, crikey, what am I supposed to do now? There's no guidance. And then they'll go, oh, no one's looking out. Cool, I'm just going to duck back where I wanted to go. So a lot of compliance horses, they operate and they feel pretty close to you. They're a bit stiff usually. They're not as soft and flowing. There's things in, but some sort of bluff pretty good. But when you take everything, all the guidance away, and give them a bit of space, you'll find out what their decision is. But a confident horse is going with you, you'll give it a bit of space, and because you set it up to do something, it'll sort of keep doing what you were doing for a bit and go, oh, until eventually it goes, why aren't you doing anything? And it'll go, what are you doing? Whereas generally the compliant horses, if they're compliant and they're not confident and relaxed with you, generally they're carrying a certain amount of tension and they're not so happy with it. So when you take everything off, there's somewhere else they'd rather be, and they generally show you that. If you just take it all off, they might just freeze, they might just drift off to where they wanted to be, drift off for home and things like that. You're losing forward, and how do you get it back? Some horses that don't have forward, I find out what direction they want to go in. So, you know, the thing that you were learned when you were kids, they said, don't run your horses for home. Okay, mum, gallop, gallop home, because they always go better for home. They always go faster, they go straighter, easier to ride for home. So why wouldn't you gallop for home? That's the best thing you can do to get a horse to get yourself in trouble when you're a kid. Now, people might laugh at that and go, that's not a good thing, you shouldn't gallop your horse for home. But at clinics, I get a lot of pretty shut down horses, and horses that lack energy, and young horses that, you know, don't have a lot of confidence, and I don't want to ruin their ribs and ruin and stuff, and have to get people to get sticks and things like that just to get their horses to go. So what I tend to do is I find their favorite direction and I let them go towards it, and that's the direction I'll ask for energy. So they'll go, oh, this is a good idea. You're asking me to go fast in my direction. Right. And then they'll flow, because you only have to ask a little bit with your legs, or, you know, a little bit less than you usually do if you're asking in the wrong direction. And then the horse will go, oh, thanks, you're helping me going back there. And then you go back there where it wanted to go, and then you just bounce it out with the reins. And on the way out, you use the reins to get your horse to go away and your legs to get it to go back. So the legs go, excellent, I'm running for home. The reins teach the horse to go away. Now, you might say, how do you get the reins to teach a horse to go away? Well, it's like if people can get a boat to go against the wind or pretty well against the wind by tacking, okay, then you can get a horse to go against the magnet using the same principle. It's you're using the draw of the horse coming back to keep that moving, and then you don't have to kick it. So the horse is going to draw back, and then right about there, you'll use the reins to turn it that way. And then that'll draw and keep it moving, and it'll turn back and go that way. So basically, the horse is going, that door's closed, that door's closed, that door's closed, and then it seeks that direction and walks out. And then you're not overusing your legs on the horse that's losing go. There's a lot of horses that lose go, we start to hunt them too much with the legs. So for a little while, just let your horse take it somewhere, get on it, ride it to where it wants to go, find out where it wants to go. And eventually, what I've seen in most horses that I've done that with, they quit going for home in a hurry anyway, because the only reason they want to go for home is because they lack confidence. And then when they realise legs worked, eventually, when you turn around and use the legs in the direction they don't want to go, they go, oh, I'm going to speed up, because for the last 10 times, legs meant go forward and speed up. That's one way, and more way that I that's probably one way I go to a lot with horses that have stopped wanting to move, is I've worked on that one. You might be talking about confident going forward on the ground too. In that instance, when you got in a horse on a circle or anything like that, and they've lost forward and they're starting to shut down because people have maybe chased them too much, and I'll teach them to lead, and I'll go forward with them, and I'll lead them and get them to trot up behind me and do lots of trot up transitions and things like that, so they're leading and they're following, and then I'll send that energy out around me on a circle for a little bit to get them to hold it. And then when they start to drop energy, I'll just go off and lead them up and get them sort of trotting up and free and things like that. That's another way to get a bit of inspiration in your horse. But, I mean, there's so many things in there that you can sort of do. And but try and find out where they want to go and use that to help them. Now, this is an interesting question. You guys might have seen something online, and it's an interesting one. It's from Mary, and it's not an unusual thing what Mary talks about here. I'm looking into using a sedative to start bringing my explosive horse back into work. I'm sure he isn't in pain anymore, but has traumatic memories of saddle and being ridden. I've been wondering if a light sedative might help him feel more relaxed. I've never done anything like this before. Used rescue remedy one time with an old age mare who was anxious floating. What are my thoughts? Now, in the meantime, Mary's talked to a vet, which is a very good thing to do, because veterinary advice is basically said you've got to be careful what you use, what sedatives you use. Some may cause this one, and how, it's not a subject I'd even want to sort of go into, of what sedatives and things like that, whether you do it or not. Now, I wouldn't endorse it. I wouldn't say it's a good idea, but I have heard positive stories from it. So one story years ago, I was breaking in for some people, and they had some pretty good horses. And there's one particular horse, there was a fellow that actually I work with starting a lot of some desert brumbies, and he did do some horses for them at some time, and they told me of a horse that was bucked him off, and after I don't know how many times of bucking him off, I said, if you keep riding that horse, it's going to kill you. So, you know, we'll maybe try another way. Now, education and knowledge is always the best tool. In this situation, maybe there could have been more education and knowledge in there on, you know, but they trialled a sedative. So what they did, and this was a vet that got a vet owner, was a vet who owns and breeds these horses. So he's probably the best one to know what sedative to use. He used a sedative in this horse, and so they sedate it, handle it, get all over it, and each day they were backing off the sedative, and apparently it worked. worked so well that the horse didn't buck, and then when it finally got to a stage that said it was not sedated at all, it rode really well, and it got to a stage that even rode through a sale, fine, no buck, everything was fine. So it was sort of a positive story that it can work. And in some horses, I know in the racing industry, I've heard they use, because these horses, you know, the service piece cost an absolute bomb. They don't want to risk injury to these horses that are, you know, that are on a lot of feed, and they're sort of, you know, not in an environment that sort of makes them relax. So they actually sedate them to start them, so they've got less likelihood of injuries, and apparently it works. So, but the unfortunate thing with it is I don't think it's going to wreck the horse, as in, and where the vet says, you know, the vet might be right. Some sedatives might, you know, because I know sometimes when I'm working with a vet, they say, oh, the horse won't remember this. It's the type of sedation I've mixed up for this. Is they probably won't remember much of it. So that you take that risk in it, which is a very dangerous risk, but it might be good, but it might not remember it. And the other thing too is it's not going to help you. It's not going to help you because you get a false sense of understanding and security around your horse that will disappear at some stage. And it's very important to sort of tune into your horse when it's on high alert and understand it and read it, because you might break it in and get it going okay, but suddenly it'll be in this unfamiliar environment and it hasn't had enough of coming down when it's worried with a connection with you in a familiar environment. It's sort of been sort of sped up through sedation. So I think, though I've heard of positive outcomes with that approach, because it's already a troubled horse, it's traumatised and things like that, I sort of think that you've got to see it and get it to come to you and want to connect with you while it's anxious and traumatised, because one day you'll be, as I say, in an unfamiliar environment, things will go wrong and you wouldn't have done it because you've used a sedative to take the horse down a bit and maybe you won't have enough tools and the horse and you won't have enough tools together to sort of help. So I would, and that's why I wouldn't endorse it, because I think it, to me, it still could set you up to be in a very dangerous situation. So I would not do it. I would say that just purely because of the possible traumatic situation that the horse might get into later on. I think it's very important horses connect, and we know how to read them when they're worried and try and figure out ways to bring them down, because it'll be better for your understanding. But yeah, it's a hard one because there are positives in it and it does work, as far as I know. I've never done it. I've been offered it and I refused it because I wanted to know what I had and I wanted to know what I had every moment. Not me offered the sedative. Actually, I would have had the sedative, but I didn't want the horse to have the sedative, that's all. No. So where was I up to? How to get... that's what we've already talked about, that one. What would it be worth talking about the difference between setting boundaries and micromanaging your horse, Kelly? Very good question. Now, it's a question that's been I've been learning all my life, and you guys have, you know, that have sort of known me a little bit have already heard me say, you let your horse find boundaries, you don't bring your boundaries to the horse. Now, that was a saying that I read years ago, and it's been a saying that I've been trying to, you know, figure out all the time I've been training. And I think I'm starting to understand it more and more. I'm understanding it more. So I used to just think, the horse finds a boundary, or we bring our boundary to them. And, you know, it's, you know, could be the difference between us, you know, potentially showing the horse that our bubble is here, or I'm going to chase you with my bubble. That's one way of doing it. But it encompasses riding, it encompasses everything. And so micromanaging is basically you're riding the horse like a motorbike. That's the way I see it, is you're constantly sort of, you know, you've got the throttle going like this, you're constantly controlling every movement, you're constantly sort of, and even on the ground you're doing it. So so your groundwork is, say for instance, you know, you see people, they put a leading hand out and then they start to sort of wave a rope and then increase the pressure. To me, you know, what you've got to look out for in your horse is even if you're going to use driving, say for instance you've sort of tried some of my stuff and you still want to drive your horses around and you can still micromanage with that, but say you guide your horse out on a circle and the horse's thoughts aren't searching, so all you're looking for is the horse searching. So can I give you another example? Actually, Liberty is a good example, because what a lot of people do is, I hope this works with the horses, but basically there's a person, now they point their hand out that way and they want their horse to go out like that, yeah? So what they do is they point and then they step and push their horse out, okay? So they just go point, the horse doesn't go, so they automatically step in and push. Now, that would, to me, be micromanaging, because you didn't give a horse a decision. You just said that after I do this, I'm going to push you. So after two goes, the horse will figure it out and then it'll search. So when you point, the horse will search. But what I'm sort of saying is, when the horse didn't know what you were going to do next, you still took away its right to search. But after three or four goes, it knew that it was going to be pushed out, so it just gave when you point. But because you never let it search in the first question, the horse goes away with anxiety, because it realises that I've got to go because you're going to step in and push me. The other way you could do is you could point and then just start making energy, and the horse will go, I'm going to move. You've made energy, so it moves. It might move in the wrong direction, so you just walk off in that wrong direction and block it and then start again. And then eventually the horse will go, now the difference is what I see if you did it two different ways is the first way will get the horse to look at you and step out in the direction you want it to go, because it'll go, oh, you're going to come in soon, I'm going to go that way, and I'm going to keep my eye on you because I know that you push me with a certain amount of energy, so I'm going to keep my eye on that. The other way is when you point and you just add some energy and the horse will look around and go, what do I do with that? And it'll go in the wrong direction, so you block it. Is what you'll see is eventually the horse, when you point, it'll look in that direction that you pointed, because it doesn't have to look at you, because it's not worried about you stepping in and pushing it. It just knows that, oh, you want me to go that way, because you let it go, which way should I go? So it chose the wrong way, but then when it chose the right way, it chose it and looked that way. So instead of saying, and then as soon as the horse looks that way, you go, that was it, okay? So that's sort of an idea, say at Liberty on the ground, that you can sort of practice with your horses to teach them to search. Now, that's allowing the horse to make a wrong decision, but it's allowing it to make any decision. You didn't say don't make the wrong decision, where the other way you never let it make the wrong decision. Okay, and that's the start of micromanaging. You're not letting the horse make the wrong decisions. So going further on the equation with that, micromanaging to me is not letting the horse make the wrong decision. In order to get a horse to make the right decision, we have to let it make the wrong decision. Some horses make the right decision first. Hallelujah. Fine. No worries at all. Horse makes the right decision. Cool. But just because it made the right decision doesn't mean it's not going to make the wrong decision tomorrow. So yeah, I guess that's the best way to look at it, is, yeah, not allowing your horse to make wrong decisions. So you might say, yeah, but you didn't let the horse make the wrong decision because you went and blocked it. Well, actually, I let it go towards his thoughts, and then I went over and closed the door. I didn't just say, no, don't go that way. Just push off. I let it make that decision. So if you want a horse to ride a straight line, instead of keeping it straight, you let it go where it wants to go a little bit, and then you just close the door. Okay, so, and then it'll go, oh, when I went that way, there was friction. And then it might try the other way, and there was friction. But you might let it go out 2 or 3 feet. You might have let it turn for home. But that, you know, some, depending on the horse and the situation, is depending on how much you give it, you know, how much space you give it before you say door's closed. Okay, so, and as they get better, those boundaries come in closer and closer. So it's almost like that you were, you know, showing the horse exactly where you want it to go. But at the start, you give them room to make a big decision in the wrong way, so you can show them that there's a boundary there, okay? So the horse is constantly finding boundaries. The boundaries aren't coming in and chasing the horse to get it to run away. So generally, micromanaging, to me, causes horses to stop searching and thinking in the right direction, because the boundary's not been letting the horse search and think. It's just been pushing the horse and showing what you want. And yeah, that's what I believe micromanaging is not allowing your horse to make mistakes. And horses do the right thing better when they've been allowed to do the wrong thing. When they've not been allowed to do the wrong thing, they never do the right thing very well, or, you know, as well as they could. Because, like kids, you can say, don't, and then what's the kids do when they get old enough to not have to listen to you as much? They go, ooh, gonna do what you didn't want me to do. So horses aren't like so much like that, but they, I believe that, that they just want to do what makes them feel better, so you got to let them do that. Once they've done that, they release tension. So the positive thing about letting a horse do what you what it wants to do is, for that moment, as soon as it does what it wants to do, it releases tension. Okay, if you don't let it do what it wants to do, it holds tension. So by not allowing it to make a mistake, you didn't allow it to release a bit of tension. So because you didn't do that, you're carrying that tension in the direction you want to go. Everyone can understand. I don't know, it sounds a bit funny, but every time a horse makes a decision, it's its decision, it goes towards its decision, it releases tension a little bit. And you've got to drop that bit of tension out before you can, you know, ask it something else. Whereas if you just keep saying don't, that's when you get that cut for worry. Okay. So micromanaging can just fill your cup up with worry all the time, because the horse is not being allowed to make decisions. I hope that makes sense. I'll read the question again, between setting boundaries and micromanaging them. So, and that's also the difference between being, you know, a pushy trainer or, you know, if you have a fence and a horse ran into a fence, if the horse goes, okay, there's a fence and it's a clear fence, the horse will know that it's not going to run through the fence because it's a clear fence. But if the fence was moving all the time, each day that horse goes, oh, geez, I'm not going to go near that fence because I don't know where it's going to be tomorrow. So horses get anxious too, because bringing our boundaries to them also makes us feel like we're pushing them around. So whereas if a horse runs towards me, if it's running towards me fast enough, I might have to step out of the way because, you know, there's no way I'm going to stop it. But basically, if I had a flag or something, I wouldn't chase it with the flag. I'd just go pop with the flag and the horse would go, oh, okay, I can't push that boundary. And then as soon as I popped the flag, I would have went, I'm calm as a cucumber. I'm here, I'm a tree. You know, would you like to be friends? But, so yeah, you know, you can show that you've got a solid boundary, but not scare your horse. Whereas if you sort of said, no, that's my boundary, and don't be disrespectful, get out of my space and I'm going to push you back, and you've brought your boundary towards that horse, and you've not only made that horse go, I'm not going to run towards him, I'm actually a bit frightened of them because they push me a bit. So bringing your boundaries to your horse in some situations make you feel like you're the cranky alpha horse that the horses don't like hanging around, which is not so good either. But yeah, if you can just put that in your head, micromanaging is not letting the horse make the wrong decision. And then you'll sort of understand when you're micromanaging. So you may not let the wrong decision go a long way, but you let it go a little bit, and then you just close the door on that. If a horse is walking forward, another instance would be you allow the horse to slow down to the next gate or the stop. So it might be trotting. You might allow it to fall out of the trot to the walk before you use your legs and say, oh, door's closed, trot, okay? Or it might be walking and you might allow it to stop before you say, go. And then the horse goes, ah, okay, when I stopped, I was asked to go. Whereas the other way would be keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, and that would be not letting your horse make the micromanaging. Cheryl, Freddie and Skeeter. I know Cheryl had a bit of a problem with one of the horses getting stuck on the fence and injured. Now, running horses together is sometimes safer than running them across fences, unless the fence is very safe. So some safe fences, you know, you can see them play and stuff, but horses can get animated over the fence. No situation in the rule of horses is completely safe. There's always something that can go wrong. So I'm only going to tell you how I deal with it. I don't really want to tell you how you do it, because it's one of those things your horse could get kicked and I go, oh, well, that didn't work. The way I deal with it with my own horses is I put them together in a big paddock. As in, it doesn't have to be a huge paddock, big enough that they've both got room. Now, if you've got a strange horse, now every now and again you get a strange horse. Now, a strange horse is like a rig gelding that it's a herder. It'll just mow a horse through a fence and just chase it and chase it and chase it. Now, I've got a stallion that won't do that. I could put him with different horses and stuff, and he doesn't drive them to the point of, he'll just, you know, do his thing. I can run geldings with him and things like that, and you know, he just does his thing. And then, so in most cases, if the horse that's a bit dominant, and you've got to watch it, sometimes putting them over the fence, if they're playful, you get one caught in the fence, kicking through fences and stuff like that, and that can be just as dangerous as putting them together. But if one is a very dominant horse and the other one's quite passive and they're not playing like stallions over the fence, then be there, just watch them. And just watch how they interact with each other. And if it looks like they're half like they're getting on, then put them in the paddock. But if they're sort of playful horses and they're squealy sort of, you know, and they get together and they, you know, then over a fence can be just as dangerous. But you might just watch them and have a safe fence they can't get injured and be there in case, you know, things go wrong. And if that makes you feel better, then do that and watch them until they settle and then put them in a paddock. But if I put them in a paddock, I just watch them and I'll be around in case I've got to come in and maybe block a horse and say, stop, you know, that horse is going to go through a fence if you keep cornering it like that. And that's why they've got to have a little bit of space, because I've seen horses in small yards go berserk on another horse, but in a big paddock, no worries at all. They come together, they become best of buddies. But I've got a mare here that if she was suddenly in a real small yard with horses that she's paddocked with, she suddenly just like chases them and gets a bit irrational because she doesn't have that space between them and it's just not right for her. So she when she gets stressed, she'll do some sort of pretty crazy looking things. But in a paddock, you know, everyone's got their space, so they're fine. And I believe that I'd sort of put them in a paddock, not on a wet day, not a slippery day, but just where they can, so the horse that's getting a bit pushed around can move away a bit, and then they can, you know, work out their pecking order, and then do it in the morning, not last thing in the afternoon. and just watch them. But yeah, if you've got a herder, you may have to intervene, and a herder, if it happens all the time, then maybe that horse is not the right one to be put in with the other one. Okay, I'll just call out to Jenny to see if any questions came through that I missed. But I think we've sort of used that pretty well just over an hour already. I'll just double check I haven't missed anything. Okay, thank you everybody. I'm just making sure. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you again next month, and I will talk a bit more. I might have put that as one of the questions, a bit more about cadence and things like that, but I'll sort of have a little bit of a subject on that, but the subject I'd like to sort of talk about is the question I didn't go right into detail. I might talk more about the trot, but is the cadence and footfall. Something, as I say, don't worry about teaching. There's small areas where I teach it. And learn more about the forequarter and the hindquarter. That's one question, Rhonda, that I didn't address, but if you go on the last, I think it was the last talk I did, I talked a bit more about weighting up the hindquarter and opening up the shoulders. There's quite a lot on that on my last talk last month, I believe. If it's not last month, it'll be the month before. And just see if you can find that on there. Thanks very much, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'll see you later.